You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that discusses developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. LawPod UK is produced by the barristers at 1 Crown Office Row and is presented by Rosalind English.
Now we bring you the 8th in the series of podcasts by Professor Catherine Barnard from Cambridge University, taking us through the legal maze leading to the withdrawal of this country from the European Union. Time is ticking away until we Brexit on the 29th of March 2019. Now that all the main parties have had their conferences, Catherine ponders the difficulties faced by Theresa May as she navigates these ever more difficult waters.
She's in a very difficult position. We all know that. She's got very little room for manoeuvre. We know that too. On the one hand, she recognises quite serious economic harm to the country if we leave without a deal on the 29th of March. But what that deal might be is very difficult to say because, of course, she's so hemmed in by her party. Now, we know that the EU has drafted the withdrawal agreement. 80-90% of it's been agreed. This massive stumbling block, boulder in the road, is the Northern Ireland border and what to do about that to make sure it remains a frictionless, open border between the north and the south of Ireland. And it takes us back to that report in December that we've talked so much about, that joint report which said you resolve the Northern Ireland border, one, by having a future deal that accommodates it. That's where Chequers fits in. Secondly, technology. Well, we're years off having suitable technology. Or thirdly, the backstop, which is that the UK as a whole stays in the customs union and the single market for goods. Now, Boris Johnson has come out and said that's totally unacceptable, even though, of course, he was in cabinet at the time when the joint report was agreed. So essentially what he's now advocating is to renege on the commitments, the political commitments, it's true, that were made in December 2017. The question then is, what on earth is the way forward? Now, Theresa May's answer has always been Chequers. And so this takes us to the carefully crafted agreement that was thrashed out in July. And Chequers sort of works for Theresa May. It doesn't work for quite a lot of her party. It doesn't work for the Leavers because they say it keeps us way too close to the EU. It doesn't work for Remainers because they say it strips away a lot of the benefits of membership. And crucially, it doesn't work for the EU either. And they don't like it because, one, it would mean that the UK is essentially customs collector for the EU as well as the UK. Secondly, it splits goods and services, which they say is unacceptable. Thirdly, there's no free movement of persons, and they think that is integral, so it's dividing up the single market. And fourthly, it talks about a level playing field in related areas. So, for example, social policy and environmental policy. But what it doesn't is continuing harmonisation of UK rules with EU rules. It only gives a non-regression clause. So for these reasons, it's unacceptable to the EU. Theresa May thinks eventually the EU will cave in on their concerns about Chequers and have Chequers as a way forward. But there's no sign of that. Indeed, what's so striking to me when I talk to people in embassies and in government in other countries is that they're very proud of the fact that the EU has remained so solid. And they have been consistently speaking with one voice through the mouthpiece of Michel Barnier. So I think what went wrong at Salzburg was the fact that there's a dialogue of the deaf going on. Theresa May is saying it's Chequers or no deal, which would be very bad news for the EU, brackets even worse for the UK. The EU is saying, actually, Chequers, good try, but it doesn't cut the mustard.
The party conference season has come on the back of Salzburg. Labour seems to be sticking to its six tests to vote with the government on any proposed Brexit deal. It also seems to be in a mess, quite frankly, on whether it approves of a second referendum or not. The Liberal Democrats are the one pro-EU Remain party. They're pushing very hard for a second referendum. It's a very confused political picture with less than 200 days to Brexit, isn't it?
That's right. And of course, it's in Labour's interests to keep fudging the picture, because ultimately they're not the ones who are going to have to negotiate with the EU absent a general election which delivers a Labour majority. And of course, we know that their party is as divided as the Conservatives, but they're not under quite the same scrutiny because they're not the party in power. The Lib Dem party conference came and went with almost nobody noticing very much about it, apart from perhaps the Fitzcable speech. And now the focus is on Theresa May and what she's going to say. Most likely she will throw some red meat to the Conservative Party by saying we're going to be very strict on immigration. And that coincides with the Migration Advisory Committee report. That was the report that said, actually, immigration has been good for the UK, particularly young EU immigration has been good for the UK. But we think there needs to be a visa scheme for anyone coming into the UK after we leave the European Union. For businesses, and here I wear my university hat, for universities, this is really serious and potentially very damaging indeed, because the visa scheme, as operated by the Home Office, is both highly bureaucratic, very expensive, and I would say it's off-putting for bright young individuals, because if you're going to be having to face a visa scheme, why not go to the US, where if you're a student, you will have a lot of money thrown at you to support you. Or if you're bright, you might say, in which case I go to Germany where I don't have to go through a visa application. Nevertheless, Theresa May is likely to say at the party conference, we will restrict migration to high-skilled migration and they need to have a visa. Of course, that presupposes migrants want to carry on coming here. All the talk is as if we are still a honeypot nation where everyone wants to come. But with a much more hostile environment in the field of immigration, backed up by visa policy, it's not at all clear that these very skilled people will want to come here with such alacrity as they did before. And of course, this puts the Conservatives in a very difficult position, because traditionally the Conservatives have been the party of business. And business has been saying, please, we need access to this skilled labour without all of the bureaucratic impediments, not to mention the cost. And the Conservatives at the moment appear to have their fingers in their ears, not listening to what the CBI and others are saying so clearly.
We had a pro-Brexit report out this week from the Institute for Economic Affairs, not the European Research Group, but another group promoting Brexit, asking for a Canada-style agreement. And Boris Johnson has today talked about a super Canada free trade agreement that can be signed after we Brexit, so we've got time to negotiate it. What do you make of these suggestions? Others are suggesting a Norway-style European Economic Area, so-called EEA deal, which would keep us in the single market in the customs union and have free movement of people. We're still discussing the whys and wherefores with no particular road to go down.
That's right. So a lot of people have said that Canada-style agreement is the inevitable landing zone given the constraints that Theresa May is operating under. And that's what Boris Johnson is very keen on. But it comes with a price tag attached. First, it would mean a hard border between the north and south of Ireland, which is why the EU is so exercised about the Northern Ireland backstop. Secondly, it will inevitably lead to checks at the borders because we will have different regulatory standards. There might be mutual recognition of those standards, but we will have different regulatory standards. So the EU will want to check. And particularly if down the line we have free trade agreements with the US, for example, as Theresa May seems to be discussing with Donald Trump this week, they will require us to lower our standards in the field of agriculture so that US agri-foods will be able to come into the UK. This is the chlorinated chicken. So the economy will take a hit, depending on who you read, how much you believe, but there will be economic consequences for that. But on the other hand, for those who voted Leave, this may be the ultimate direction of travel. And indeed, if you remember the chart that Michel Barnier showed to the EU27 back in December, this was what he saw as the end point. The end point would be a Canada-style agreement for the UK. Theresa May knows that would be very serious for the British economy. She doesn't want it, which is why she's proposed checkers. We're back to where we were at the beginning. Checkers is unacceptable to a lot of leavers, quite a lot of remainers, and to the EU.
Checkers did, of course, come after the December 2017 agreement, which has caused the conflict over the Northern Ireland border problem. Given what the EU got the UK government to sign that there would be no border between Northern and Southern Ireland. Do you think May has known all along that she'll have to opt for a Norway-style deal and stay within the single market and customs union? It's all presupposed, isn't it, really? We're having these arguments, but actually there isn't much the UK government can do.
Well, what the UK government can do is to crash out with no deal on the 29th of March. And as UK and Changing Europe have shown in their report, this is going to be really very serious for the UK economy, for food supply, for medicine supply. It's absolutely true that in the absence of any special agreement, airlines won't fly either on that day because British pilots won't have their licences recognised anymore, and the British aircraft will not have their safety certificates recognised. And this was spelt out in the technical notices published by the UK this week. So it's clear that no deal will be very serious indeed. But at the moment, because the inability to reach agreement on the Northern Ireland backstop and also the political declaration that's meant to accompany the divorce agreement, which spells out what our future arrangements might be, back to checkers. Therefore, it looks like at the moment we're heading towards a no deal. Now, it may well be that if this is the direction of travel, there will be a sufficient majority in the Commons to say this is just not acceptable. We've got to stop this. And the one way forward might be to have another referendum to try and get our way out of this impasse, because at the moment there's no majority in the Commons for any particular outcome.
A people's vote, but with Keir Starmer style, a Remain option on the ballot paper too.
And this becomes legally difficult because just remember that then it first needs to be an Act of Parliament before any referendum can be held, and that Act of Parliament will have to specify what the questions will be. Will there be one question with three limbs, essentially, Remain, leave on Theresa May's deal, or leave with no deal? Or, as Len McCluskey has been arguing, there should be two options, leave or leave with Theresa May's deal. Or do you have two ballots? You have one looking at one permutation of those questions, and then the following week a second ballot. Should, if you only have one ballot with three questions, would it be done on single transferable vote? What would the franchise be? Would it be the same as for the 2016 referendum? Or would it allow EU nationals who are living in the UK and British nationals living abroad to be able to vote? And all of these are really difficult questions that are going to take time, and time is not on our side.
Do you think the EU's playing a long game, that it's deliberately letting the UK get in a muddle? You had said the whole point of Article 50 was that no one was supposed to leave. So if the EU and Barnier and the 27 countries that stand united behind him really do think they could trigger a second referendum, or perhaps a third referendum, one might say, because there was a referendum in the 70s on Europe, if they could trigger another referendum, that gives the EU the hope that the UK will remain with them.
I think there's two observations. One, the EU is playing hardball, but that's entirely to be expected because it's the UK leaving the EU, not the other way around.
But actually, the EU didn't come across well at the Salzburg meeting, did it?
No, it didn't. And I think it was extremely unfortunate that Donald Tusk should have put out that Instagram picture of Theresa May standing in front of a cake stand and suggesting that she couldn't have any cherries. It was belittling, and it looked like they weren't taking us seriously. In fact, the EU's taking us very seriously. But two points worth bearing in mind. One, the EU holds all the trump cards. That's why they can be as hardball as they like, because ultimately they have access to the single market, which they can say yay or nay to as you choose. Secondly, and this is what the UK doesn't get at all at the moment, because we are obsessed with Brexit, it's the only real issue that's being discussed anywhere at the moment, is for the EU, it's much less important. For the states on the western side of Europe, it will have economic impact, particularly for Ireland, but also France, Germany, Belgium, Denmark, Netherlands. But as you move further east, the less relevant Brexit becomes. And my Finnish colleagues tell me that often they never even discuss it from one week to the next. Virtually nothing is reported in the national papers because Brexit is largely an irrelevance to their day-to-day life, and it's also largely an irrelevance to the EU going forward, because they're much more concerned about the migration crisis, about what's going on in Poland and Hungary. They're very concerned about what's going on the Russian border, and there's also fragility still in the Eurozone. Those are the big ticket items for the EU. They just want Brexit to be over and done with. It's a distraction from sorting out these other issues.
There's a counter-argument, because more countries want to Brexit, it's said, and that's why they're making an example of the UK, showing how impossible it is to Brexit.
And indeed, what we do see is that those countries which were showing some sort of interest, having looked at the difficulties the UK has been having, you see the population, the view is changing. What will be interesting is to see how the public votes in the European Parliament elections in May 2019, because it will give a strong message one way or the other whether the EU public is properly engaged with the EU, or whether they don't bother to turn out to vote, or whether they vote for much more extreme anti-EU parties.
So, in that case, is the EU deliberately causing the conflict within the UK? Conflict within parties as well as between parties, and who knows what's going to unravel with the Conservative Party conference, but everybody seems to agree that May's Chequers plan is now dead in the water. I mean, how does May wriggle her way out of this? A royal commission, perhaps? And again, that suits the EU because it would play for time.
So that would be one way forward, if not a royal commission, because we know that they can take years, but a commission of all the talents, perhaps building on the Brexit Select Committee, which of course has membership from right across the political spectrum, but trying to bring together all sides to say, what do we actually want out of this deal? Brexit means Brexit only takes you so far. What we're having to face up to now are the trade-offs between remaining close to the EU and having restrictions on sovereignty but less economic damage, or Canada style, much further from the EU, maintenance of our sovereignty but significant economic harm.
And where would you put your money? I know that you remain impartial, and thank you for explaining a complex issue with such precision and clarity. But if you had to put a bet, is there going to be another general election? Oh no, not another one. Will May be deposed as leader of the Conservative Party? Will Corbyn drop some of his six tests? Will the Lib Dems succeed in getting a people's vote? Over to you, Catherine.
If I knew the answer to those questions, I wouldn't be sitting here. I'd be sitting on my yacht in the Caribbean. But what I would say is I still think the chances of a further referendum are quite slim for the reasons I've explained. The practical difficulties are great. I still think ultimately that there will be some sort of deal on the divorce, which would give us a bit more time in respect to the transition. But all of this is so uncertain that we've got to be prepared for some very, very bumpy periods over the next while.
And a no deal.
And a no deal, indeed. But I think no deal is really looking down the barrel of a gun, really very serious indeed.
So how could your Royal Commission, which isn't a Royal Commission, it's a commission of inquiry that combines all the talents across all the political parties with expertise in Brexit, could that report in a short timescale?
Actually, a lot of work's been done. If you look at all of the Select Committee reports from the House of Lords and from the Commons, there's an awful lot of thinking has been done. And what there needs to be is to have both sides in a room hammering out what might be a suitable trade-off, but also one which is feasible and which could be offered to the EU.
So it could be done in months, not years?
I think it'd be done in months, not years, because that's all we've got.
LawPod UK is presented by Rosalind English and produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and recommend us to a friend.